What is art without the muse? Many of Western art's most famous works are depictions of women. But who were these women? Do they have their own stories to share with the world? Hi, listeners. Grace Anna here, host of Art Muse, a podcast that shares the life stories of the women pictured in famous works of art. In doing so, Art Muse aims to reshape the ways in which we interpret these well-known works by paying dues to the women whose images have been immortalized, but whose names and stories have been wrongfully overlooked. Each episode focuses our attention on a specific female muse, sharing their important life and legacy. By sharing these women's stories, we are given the opportunity to appreciate artworks from a new perspective, through the eyes of the women whose image stares back at us. Season 3 continues to share the life stories of the women pictured in famous works of art, this time focusing on artist models who were also performers in their own right. Season 3 will begin its release this fall. We cannot wait to share these amazing women's stories with you. In the meantime, we hope you continue to enjoy Season 1 and 2 of Art Muse, available on all streaming platforms. Until next time, bye for now.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Stars of the Golden Age, a show that highlights the lives of legends from film, music, and the birth of television during Hollywood's Golden Age and the few years surrounding it. I am your host, Erin Carlson. Today, we will be talking about the love goddess, Rita Hayworth. This episode is dedicated to my friend Danette. I worked with Danette years and years ago at a couple different jobs, actually, and she is just one of the loveliest people that you will ever find in this world. She requested Rita Hayworth, so here she is for you, Danette. Rita Hayworth was born as Margarita Carmen Cancino on October 17, 1918, in Brooklyn, New York. She was the firstborn child for her parents, Eduardo and Volga. Both Eduardo and Volga were professional dancers. Volga had performed with the Ziegfeld Follies, actually. The family would be completed with two more children, Rita's younger brothers, Eduardo Jr. and Vernon. Eduardo was Spanish, and he owned a dance studio in Brooklyn where he taught a variety of Latin dance styles. Volga, of course, worked and performed alongside her husband. Eduardo's father had been a renowned dancer and had his own studio in Madrid. And his sister was also a dancer. She had actually been Eduardo's dance partner. So it came as no surprise when Rita and her siblings fell seamlessly into the world of dancing. Dancing was life for the Cancino family. Rita later said, "As soon as I could stand on my own feet, I was given dance lessons." The family spent more time at the dance studio than they did at home. Rita didn't necessarily want to devote her life to dancing, but that was how her family rolled, and that is what was expected of her. At home, things weren't very happy. By the time Rita was a few years old, Eduardo and Volga had begun to fight. A lot. As the years went by, Rita, being the oldest child, was often left with the responsibility of shielding her younger siblings from the emotional turmoil filling the air of their home. It became a pretty toxic environment, and Rita was left with a lot on her young shoulders. She was just a child. Eduardo was a heavy, heavy drinker, and it doesn't sound like he was very good at it, so this definitely did not help things. In 1926, Eduardo moved his family to Hollywood to begin a fresh new chapter in their lives. The two boys went to traditional school, but not Rita. She had a private tutor and was pushed into a life of dance. There was no time for traditional school, and her parents didn't really think as a girl that she needed an academic education. It certainly was not a priority. All of her time was to be devoted to training in order to keep the Cancino dance legacy alive. Another motivation for the move was films. Eduardo wanted his daughter to become a film star. The first film Rita Hayworth appeared in, still as Margarita Cancino, was a short called La Fiesta in 1926. She was 8 years old, and her father also appeared in the film short with her. Rita became her father's new dance partner when she was 13 years old. It was 1931, and the country was deep into the Great Depression, so Eduardo's dance studio was forced to close. Nobody could afford dance lessons anymore. Eduardo went back to performing, and he chose his barely teenage daughter to be his dance partner. Remember, his wife is a dancer. She's a former Ziegfeld girl. But he chose his daughter. And since she was way too young to perform in the nightclubs in L.A., Eduardo took his daughter across the border into Tijuana. There, she worked like wild, doing 4 shows a day. In what time she did have between those 4 shows, she was required to work with her tutor to complete some studies. Rita later said of this time, quote, "Dancing in Tijuana was my summer camp. How else do you think I could keep up with Fred Astaire?" End quote. There was an even darker side to Rita's life as a 13-year-old girl and her time in Tijuana. It's widely documented that Rita was sexually abused by her own father while the two were in Mexico together. He would even allegedly present her as his wife at times. It seems Rita's mother, Volga, either knew or had a suspicion of her husband's disgusting abuse, because when they returned to LA, Volga would sleep with Rita to protect her at night. That poor girl. After Tijuana, Rita's next job was performing on a gambling boat, an environment most fathers would forbid their beautiful teenage daughters from going near. Eduardo Cancino was shoving his daughter right into it, sending her to the wolves. As you can tell, Rita Hayworth lived a very unconventional life. It may sound like an exciting and thrilling life for a teenage girl, the nightlife part, not the abuse part, and maybe it would be for some, but it wasn't for Rita. She was painfully shy and felt very little freedom in the path of her life. She was vibrant on the stage, but once she walked off the stage, she was a completely different person. Her stage persona was an act, a good act. But in reality, she was very reserved and very quiet. She was an introvert. I'm guessing if any of her life would have been up to her, she would not have chosen a life in the performing arts. As an introvert myself, I can say this with almost complete certainty. In 1935, when Rita was 16 years old, a chance encounter at a gig introduced Rita to Fox producer Winfield Sheehan. He had been pretty impressed with her stage presence and wanted to showcase her talents in their films. She had done a little work in Mexican films, but Hollywood would be a whole new ballgame. But there was still the little fact that Margarita Cancino was half Spanish. You know how much old Hollywood loved their pure whiteness. The first step taken in her short 6-month contract with Fox was to shorten that Margarita to Rita. So her first Hollywood film credits were under the name Rita Cancino, and she was cast in mostly degrading dance roles. Similar to Myrna Loy, who we just talked about, Rita was cast as a variety of different ethnicities. Egyptian, Argentinian, Russian. Exotic films were hot, and actors and actresses who were not perfectly white were showcased in all kinds of exotic roles. Rita loved her father, but she felt insanely controlled by him, which she definitely was. I think she realized much later in life just how toxic this relationship with her father really was. He had a tight leash on her and gave her very little freedom in her life, not to mention the alleged sexual abuse. In 1936, 17-year-old Rita Cancino began dating a much older man named Edward Judson. Within a year, she married him. In 1937, 18-year-old Rita was presented with a chance to leave her father's controlling hand, but it was right into the hands of another controlling man. She was 18 years old when she married Eddie Judson. He was 40. Rita's husband was 1 year younger than her father, and just as controlling. Changes at Fox ended Rita's short contract with them after 6 months, but her new husband Eddie Judson had some connections in the film industry, so he used them to get his new, young, beautiful wife into more films. His biggest priority was promoting her. So every dollar she made, he put right back into her promotion. He had her going out every night attending social events so she could hopefully end up in the motion picture magazines. He wanted her seen. He controlled every aspect of her life, how she spent her time, who she interacted with, and mostly, he controlled her money. Rita was quickly signed under contract with a new film studio later in 1937. Unfortunately, it was with one of the most monstrous studio heads in Hollywood, Harry Cohn and Columbia Pictures. Harry Cohn was very well known for his disgusting treatment of the women that he had under contract at Columbia. He would threaten women's careers if they did not give in to his sexual demands. Rita Hayworth refused to give Harry Cohn what he wanted. So he began her contracted time with Columbia in mostly B films. Harry Cohn wasn't kind enough to just put her in low-rate movies and call it good, though. He had to torture her a little more for saying no to him. He would ridicule her and disrespect her every time he saw her. He was mad. Nobody said no to him. And the sickest part of this? Rita's husband tried forcing her to give in to Harry Cohn's advances. He said it would be good for her career. And then there was the issue of her race again. She was too Spanish, according to Harry Cohn. She needed to look more American. She needed to look more white. And Rita's husband was 100% on Team Harry Cohn with this. They were going to completely transform Margarita Cancino and rip away every ounce of her Spanish heritage so she fit better into Harry Cohn's ideals of the perfect American film actress. Rita was forced to undergo some pretty intense changes as part of her grand Columbia Pictures transformation. Of course, it wasn't uncommon for the Big Five studios to send their actresses in for some cosmetic changes. Teeth were capped, noses were minimized, faces were lifted, pills were pushed. One of Rita's changes in particular was a very painful one. She was forced to undergo 2 years of painful electrolysis to drastically change her naturally low hairline. I have also read that she had a surgery to attain this result a little quicker. Either way, it was painful. In addition, her naturally dark hair was dyed red, and root touch-ups were required frequently to keep up with the look. Harry Cohn made her take singing and elocution lessons, with the primary focus being to remove any remaining ethnic accent in her voice. She was forced to lose weight with the help of some little white mystery pills. And her name, Cancino? It had to go. This was the point Margarita Cancino turned Rita Cancino, became Rita Hayworth, adopting her mother's maiden name. The most shocking thing about this wild transformation? Colombia made no effort to hide the fact that they were trying to erase the Spanish from Margarita Cancino in order to anglicize Rita Hayworth. It was something they were proud of. That being anything other than a white all-American woman was a negative thing. And, of course, as soon as Rita Hayworth emerged with her new look, the studio began putting her in much better films. She was going to be their new star. Rita's breakthrough role at Columbia was Only Angels Have Wings with the one and only Cary Grant in 1939. Columbia's top actress of the time, Jean Arthur, who was also a strong target of Harry Cohn's sexual advances, was the lead in the movie. But Rita's glamorous scenes definitely stood out. By the following year, she had replaced Jean Arthur as Columbia's number one. Rita Hayworth and Fred Astaire first swirled their magic around the dance floor together in 1941 in You'll Never Get Rich, and again the following year in You Were Never Lovelier. Fred Astaire was the most famous dancer in the world, and he had been a friend of Rita's father. He loved dancing with Rita Hayworth. Ginger Rogers may be best known as Fred Astaire's partner, but he has said that Rita Hayworth was his favorite. She learned steps faster than anyone I'd ever known, Astaire said of her. I'd show her a routine before lunch. She'd be back right after lunch and have it down to perfection. She apparently figured it out in her mind while she was eating. Harry Cohn continued to control and manipulate Rita. She had zero privacy on the Columbia lot. She was never safe from him. Her dressing room, which should have been her safe haven there, was bugged. Cohn had spies watching her, both inside and outside of the studio. Not only her, but other actresses. He thought he owned them all. Different stars would take turns being the highest priority of his obsession, but nobody was ever safe under the rule of Harry Cohn. Rita had this to say of him after his death. Quote, I was under exclusive contract. They owned me. I think he had my dressing room bugged. He was very possessive of me as a person. He didn't want me to go out with anybody, have any friends. No one can live that way. You want to know what I think of Harry Cohn? He was a monster. End quote. Columbia loaned Rita Hayworth out to other studios to help make her a star on their buck. And between all of the studios she had made films for in her early years under contract, she was cemented as Hollywood's number one femme fatale, the love goddess. That image was intensified once copies of a photograph from a Life magazine photo shoot went old-timey viral. A sexy and revealing photograph of her kneeling on her bed, wearing a very revealing white and black negligee. Soon, almost every serviceman fighting in World War II had a copy of this photo. It was the second most popular pinup photo of World War II. Rita's image was all over, and her work was all over on movie screens. She was hot, but she was still a very shy and guarded woman. She had a huge dislike of Hollywood gossip and tried to avoid being part of it at all costs. Her husband was still trying to promote her like crazy, but if it was up to her, she would stay far from the public's eye at all times. On gossip columnist Luella Parsons and Hedda Hopper, Rita said, quote, they interviewed me a few times very early in my career, and very early in my career, I decided to never talk to either one of them again. They were barred from my set at Columbia all the time I was there, end quote. Her life was her life, and she didn't want the whole world knowing about it. Remember, this isn't the life that she chose for herself. She never wanted to be such a public figure. She never wanted to be a performer. Of her husband, Rita later said, quote, I married him for love, but he married me for investment. For 5 years, he treated me as if I had no mind or soul of my own, end quote. Rita divorced Eddie Judson in 1942, and in 1943, she married her second husband, Orson Welles. She was filming CoverGirl with the other great male Hollywood dancer, Gene Kelly, when she left for her lunch break on September 7, 1943. When she returned from lunch, she was married to Orson Welles. I'm not even sure she had time to eat lunch. This marriage was a bit better than her first, but it was far from ideal. Rita immersed herself in books that she thought could help her engage more intellectually with Orson, and she supported the progressive causes that he supported. She wanted to please him. She wanted to be the perfect wife for him. But he was not the perfect husband. He visited sex workers and had affairs, most notably with Gloria Vanderbilt and Judy Garland, who were both very young. He was another controlling man who treated Rita like dirt. Rita later said the only happiness she'd ever had in her life was her time with him. Orson Welles remarked later on that, "If this was happiness, imagine what the rest of her life had been." Back at Columbia, Rita was appearing in musicals, showcasing her beautiful dance talents. But in 1946, she was cast in her most famous film, a movie that catapulted the sexy pinup dancer's image to even greater heights, the film noir classic, Gilda. Rita's second marriage was over when she and Orson separated in 1947 after just 4 years. The marriage may not have lasted, but it did bring something good to them. Rita became a mother when she was 25 years old in 1944, daughter Rebecca. Rita and Orson appeared in one film together, The Lady from Shanghai. Orson Welles had given the world what is now often considered the best movie ever made, Citizen Kane. But at the time, it was highly controversial and he was hated by many. Most notably, William Randolph Hearst, who the story was obviously based on. None of the major studios would touch Orson Welles or any of his projects. But now he was married to one of the most famous actresses in Hollywood, and he took full advantage of that. Through Rita, Orson's film, The Lady from Shanghai, was taken on by his wife's studio, Columbia Pictures. He wrote, directed, and starred in the film, and Rita starred in it as well, even though the two were separated by this point. Rita looked quite different in The Lady from Shanghai. Her trademark long, flowing red hair was cut into a short, curled bob and dyed platinum blonde, at her estranged husband's insistence, and absolutely hated by Harry Cohn. Around this same time, Rita formed her very own production company, which was distributed by Columbia. This move gave her a ton more freedom in her films. Her company was called Beckworth Corporation. Beck for her daughter Rebecca, and Worth for Hayworth. The first Beckworth film released was The Loves of Carmen, which allowed Rita to embrace her Spanish culture once again. After her divorce from Orson Welles, Rita needed a break. A break from work, a break from Hollywood altogether. So off to Europe she sailed. What was meant to be a restful vacation turned into the beginning of a new love. Not just any love, she fell in love with a prince. While in France, Rita met Prince Ali Khan of Pakistan, and a romance quickly blossomed. The prince pulled out all the stops in wooing Rita. He did everything he could to suck her in. This was scandalous because the prince was married, but not for much longer. This was a world so far removed from that of a Hollywood movie star, but maybe that's what Rita was seeking, an escape from Hollywood. In a shocking move, she broke her contract with Columbia Pictures, moved out of the country, and married Prince Ali Khan, son of the Aga Khan, on May 27, 1949. Rita Hayworth was now a real-life princess, years before Grace Kelly did it. 7 months later, on December 28th of that year, 1949, Rita had her second child, a daughter named Yasmin. Yes, she was pregnant at their wedding. This marriage also did not last long. It was apparent pretty quickly that this wasn't going to be the fairy tale ending that Rita may have envisioned. She was thrust into the royal spotlight and expected to attend society event after society event. Just what an introvert wants. The paparazzi was wild over her. It was too much. Ollie was still every bit the playboy that he had been when he first seduced Rita, so settling down into a blissful married life never happened, and it was never going to. It was overwhelming and isolating. They separated in 1951, just 2 years after getting married. And while still officially married to Rita Hayworth, Prince Ollie Khan set his sights on a few other Hollywood starlets: Yvonne DiCarlo, Joan Fontaine, and Jean Tierney. Rita returned to Hollywood and to the silver screen. Harry Cohn took her back, but he wasn't putting much effort into showcasing her anymore after she walked out on him to become a princess. That man was the king of grudges. Rita's divorce from the prince was final in 1953, and that same year, she left her career on the sidelines again and married singer Dick Hames. He had a total of 6 wives. Rita was the 4th. That tells you it didn't last, so I'm sorry to say this also wasn't Rita Hayworth's happily ever after. Far from. Dick was verbally and physically abusive to Rita, even in public, and he was even the cause of her almost losing her daughters. While Rita was away on tour with her new husband, which he insisted she do in order to boost his own fame, the girls were left in the care of Dick's mother. She left the girls all alone on at least one occasion, which was reported to the authorities. Rita was then investigated by Child Protective Services and was charged with child neglect. The charges were eventually dropped, but the damage was done. She knew staying with Dick Hames would just invite further turmoil, so she filed for divorce in 1955 after 2 destructive years. This marriage had taken a pretty big toll on her financial situation, so back to making movies once again. This poor woman, just look at what her life had held up to this point. She was only 37 years old, and she had been used, abused, manipulated, and stripped of every choice of how she wanted her life to go. She was forced into a life of dance so young that she never even had the opportunity to consider what she wanted in life. She had tried to find the simplest thing 4 times and was let down each time. Love. All she wanted was love. But she did have her 2 little girls. This divorce from Dick Hames marked a time of transformation for Rita Hayworth. She was going to put herself, her girls, and her career first. She was going to decide the direction that her life went, and she wanted to become a serious dramatic actress. She said goodbye to Harry Cohn and tucked him in the past with all of the other abusive men who had taken advantage of her. But during this transformative period, Rita found love again, or so she thought. This girl just wanted love so badly. This time it was director-producer James Hill, and they had met during the production of Separate Tables in 1957. Rita married James Hill on February 3, 1958. This marriage seemed to be the most promising yet for Rita. She really didn't ask for much in her marriages. She wanted a simple life with ample time at home. She wanted a quiet and uncomplicated life. But she didn't get that with James Hill either. He was consumed with work, and he wanted to put Rita in picture after picture with his production company. He was partnered with Burt Lancaster and Harold Hecht, the Hecht Hill Lancaster Company. Then they started to fight. Pretty bad. Hill wasn't afraid to be abusive to her in public either. Rita just wanted to rest. She wanted peace and calm. She wanted to be treated with dignity and respect. She didn't want to be told what to do anymore, to feel like she was constantly falling short on other people's expectations of her. I think she could have found happiness on her own as a single woman, but she didn't seem to have the capacity to be alone. She was always searching for love and acceptance outside of herself. Rita's fifth marriage was over in September of 1961, after 3 years. This would be her final marriage. At the end of her fifth marriage, Rita Hayworth was just shy of 43 years old. She was still young. There was still time to find her peace and calm and happiness within herself. But friends were beginning to see some changes in Rita, unsettling changes. She was forgetting things frequently, and then she began forgetting who her closest friends were at times. One of her dearest friends, actress Ann Miller, recalled a time when Rita had invited her and choreographer Hermes Pan over for dinner. When they arrived at Rita's home, it took her several minutes to open the door. When she did, she opened the door holding a butcher knife. She didn't know who her friends were. She accused them of being fans and of invading her privacy before chasing them off of her property with the knife. They were two of her closest friends, and she didn't recognize them. Rita Hayworth was in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's disease. Rita's tumultuous life had led her into a life of heavy drinking, and this, of course, did not help her health and the disease that was beginning to slowly take her away. Frustrated with the symptoms and forgetfulness she was experiencing, Rita began drinking more. There wasn't the awareness of dementia and Alzheimer's in the 1960s that we have today. I'm sure she felt immensely trapped in her own mind. And those around her didn't understand what was happening to her either. Everyone blamed it on alcohol. She must have just always been drunk. Period. Rita was suffering, and she was left without the support she needed. If you have ever watched a loved one suffer from dementia, you know how scary of an experience it can be for them. My heart broke for Rita as I read about her experiences with the disease. Rita still wanted to act in films a bit, well, she kind of had to financially. But it was getting harder and harder for her. She forgot her lines frequently and required cue cards. She began wandering off set. Her behavior made directors very apprehensive in hiring her. Rita's last film was in 1972, The Wrath of God. Her behavior was becoming too unpredictable, and sadly, her family and friends continued to attribute it to alcohol. She was now a decade into her battle against Alzheimer's disease, and everyone just thought it was alcoholism. Rita's mother, Volga, had died in 1945 at only 47 years old from a ruptured appendix. Rita's father, Eduardo Cancino, died in 1968. Rita was experiencing symptoms of Alzheimer's, but she was still functioning pretty well when her father passed. And then her two brothers, Eduardo Jr. and Vernon, both died within 1 week of each other in 1974. These losses were very traumatic and had devastating effects on her illness. Rita's condition became public knowledge when she made headlines in 1976. She had been on a flight to London and had a really, really bad episode. She was disoriented and angry and confused. She went into a rage, throwing things and being very difficult to control. Unfortunately, someone had tipped off the press and photographers were waiting at the airport when the plane landed. This makes me so angry. Rita was a very private woman. and she was sick. She never wanted to be in the spotlight. She spent her entire career avoiding the press. And here she was, being controlled by a disease that had taken over the controls of her mind, and her behavior was being exploited for the entertainment of others. This wasn't news. This was gossip. She looked extremely disheveled in these photos. She was clearly not in a good place. Rita Hayworth would never have wanted to be seen in such a state. It's just really gross that this had to be something that was shared with the world. We see this kind of thing today more than ever. Only now it's done by everyday people against everyday people. You know, the snapping of photos of strangers from our phones and then plastering them online as a joke. Funny, funny. This needs to stop. It is such an invasion. Nobody deserves this. Rita definitely did not deserve this. It would still be 5 whole years after this incident before Rita was finally diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. She was finally diagnosed in 1981, after suffering alone for 20 years, being called an erratic alcoholic for 20 years. 20 years of extremely alarming behavior, and she was finally diagnosed. She could finally get the help that she needed. Finally. Rita's youngest daughter, Yasmin, took control of the situation. She devoted her life to caring for her mother after the diagnosis. Now that she knew it wasn't her choices that led to the last 2 decades of erratic behavior, she was relieved to finally have an answer, a reason. And she went all in to care for her mother. And then she went all in to devote the rest of her life to Alzheimer's research. Rita Hayworth had finally found the peace and calm that she had chased her entire life, but she sadly couldn't enjoy it. Rita's condition declined rapidly after she was finally diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. She rarely recognized her loved ones, and then she lost her ability to walk and speak. She slowly slipped away until there was nothing left at all. Rita Hayworth died on May 14th, 1987. She was only 68 years old. Rita Hayworth once said about when her time on Earth was over, quote, "To the press, whatever you write about me, don't make it sad," end quote. So although her story makes me very sad, I want to tell you that Rita Hayworth was love and hope and beauty and so much dang talent. She overcame unbelievable control and abuse and heartbreak. She was kind and loving and had a huge heart. She loved her daughters fiercely and could have given that much love to any man who had the decency to accept it from her. Her daughter described her as a gentle bird. She was a gentle bird who could do the most remarkably beautiful things on a dance floor. But dance talents aside, she was just a woman who wanted to leave a positive and loving impact on the world. It's difficult to not be sad about her story. But today, we will honor Rita's request and be happy for the good parts of it. And now I would like to share a few other interesting things I learned during my research. Bullet point number 1. An atomic bomb used as a test bomb by the U.S. Navy in July of 1946 was named Gilda, after Rita Hayworth's iconic character in the movie of the same name. It was named Gilda because of her bombshell status. Get it? Well, Rita Hayworth got it too, and she was pissed. Another fun fact about Operation Crossroads that I found very interesting was this. The test took place at Bikini Atoll in the Marshall Islands. French fashion designer Louis Rayard took inspiration from Operation Crossroads when naming his new bathing suit design, the Bikini. Bullet point number 2. Rita Hayworth's character of Gilda was the main inspiration for the character of Jessica Rabbit in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the sexiest cartoon lady to ever live. Bullet point number 3. Frank Sinatra was the godfather of Rita and Orson Welles' daughter, Rebecca. Bullet point number 4. Rita Hayworth replaced Jean Arthur as Columbia Pictures' number one star and Harry Cohn's number one victim. And the two women have the same birthday, October 17th. Rita was born in 1918 and Jean was born in 1900. In conclusion, Rita Hayworth was robbed of her choices from the moment she could walk. Once her feet could move across a floor, it was determined for her that she would be a dancer. And once she was a talented dancer, she was forced to earn a paycheck doing it, as a child. And then an even bigger paycheck in the movies. She was abused and manipulated by every single man she allowed into her life. And the man who set the groundwork for this kind of behavior was her own father. Her father taught her how women were supposed to be treated by a man. Unfortunately, all he taught her was that she deserved nothing more than disrespect, control, abuse, and the absence of any personal opinions or decisions. He did this to her. In my opinion, Margarita Cancino's father is solely responsible for setting her up for a life of abuse and sadness. Margarita Cancino could have been a seamstress, she could have been a secretary, she could have been a writer, she could have been an artist. She could have found a man who valued and loved her the way she wanted to be valued and loved. And she could have had children with him and lived a perfect, happy life with this family. She could have lived and died without any of us ever knowing she existed. This is what she wanted. She never wanted any of us to know that she ever existed. All she wanted was a close circle of people to know her, and she wanted them all to love and respect her for who she was. Instead, she was ripped of her entire identity, and she was ripped of her entire culture. She was completely remolded and told what to do and where to go and who to be. I am an introvert. There are days I wish I could be an extrovert. It looks so fun and freeing sometimes. But I am not, and I never will be. I, like Margarita Cancino, just want a simple life. I want peace and love and calm. And I am so lucky to have that. So lucky. I cannot imagine being forced into the kind of life Rita Hayworth was forced into. I wish she could have had all the peace and love that she wanted. That's all she wanted. Rita Hayworth was a woman full of love and gentleness, but she was never quite able to embrace her own self-worth. She consistently sought love and acceptance from men, and she was let down each and every time. She said, "Most men fell in love with Gilda and wakened with me." She was quiet and reserved. She was not Gilda. Everyone wanted Gilda when the woman underneath was such a beautiful and remarkable gem. It's just really, really sad. I want to end on another quote from Rita. She said, "All I wanted was just what everybody else wants, you know, to be loved." Let us all give Rita Hayworth the love she deserved in life by watching her talents on screen. Let's all make some time to watch a Rita Hayworth film soon. Her legacy deserves to shine and live on. And when you watch her, think about the things you learned today. When you do, you can see just how good she was at what she did. She lit up so bright in front of the cameras that you would never know the sadness that resided within her. Thank you, Rita Hayworth, for lighting up through dance so brightly that we had no idea of the internal suffering you endured. You sacrificed your life to entertain the world. God, I wish someone would have given you the love you deserved. And thank you all for listening. If you or someone you know is being sexually abused, please ask for help. There is help available. You can contact RAIN 24/7 by phone or by chat. Visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. Their number is 1-800-656-4673. If you are the victim of domestic violence, you can find help from the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233 or text BEGIN to 88788. If you or someone you love is showing signs of Alzheimer's disease, you can call the Alzheimer's Association Helpline 24/7 at 1-800-272-3900. For resources and information on the disease, visit their website at alz.org. Rita Hayworth suffered in silence with domestic abuse, sexual abuse, and Alzheimer's disease. But you don't have to. Now I would like to share a review of the week with you. I have another not-so-good one for you. This one comes from Apple Podcasts from user Jane444. Jane gave the show a very sad 2 stars and said, "Lightweight. Feels like I'm listening to a preschool teacher who's done a lightweight book report." So I guess I got a D on my book report. But hey, it's better than a lightweight Wikipedia report, right? At least I'm reading books. Thank you for taking the time to leave a review, Jane, even though it's not the hottest. I do want to say that I never worked so hard on any book report in school as I do on each and every one of these episodes every week. And I still got A's and B's on all of them. I'll just say to this that I do my very best with the time I have to share this free content with you all, and I always make sure to use the best books and resources possible so I can give you the most accurate information out there. And my preschool teacher voice is actually my all-the-time voice. So I guess I went on the right career path at least. Being a preschool teacher makes up the majority of my identity. It's what occupies the majority of my heart and soul. So sounding like a preschool teacher, well, I'm really, really proud of that. My voice has been the voice of trust to a couple hundred children. I get at least a dozen I love yous every single day. I'm smothered in hugs and love every day. Those kids love me. I love them, and I would die a million deaths for any one of them without hesitation. So, preschool teacher voice is what you get here at Stars of the Golden Age. I had this voice before I was a teacher, and I will die with this voice. So, I'm sorry for those that don't care for the show, but the good news is there are others out there, and hopefully one of them can give you what you're looking for. Those that love my preschool teacher voice and my D-average book reports, thank you so much for sticking around. See, I told you I would read the bad ones too, but I'm also going to defend myself against them. Thanks, guys, and thank you to Danette for requesting Miss Rita Hayworth. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. My primary source for this episode was a book titled American Legends, The Life of Rita Hayworth by Charles River Editors. I also used a book titled Rita Hayworth, Legacy of a Leading Lady, a TCM documentary titled Rita, a Vanity Fair article by Hadley Hall Mears from September 23rd, 2020, the U.S. Naval Institute, and IMDb.